It is May 24th, 1543, and we are in the cathedral of the city of Frauenburg on the coast of the Baltic Sea. The canon of the cathedral, Nicholas Copernicus, lies on his deathbed, paralyzed by a stroke. Into this somber room strides George Reticus, a young man who has been working with Copernicus for several years.
Copernicus, I have the finished book. It arrived today from Nuremberg. On the revolutions of the celestial bodies.
Let me hold it. It is my first printed work.
Now all of Europe will know of your new astronomical theories.
Oh, they are not all new theories. Some I learned from the Greeks, such as Aristarchus.
Oh, true, true, but we've been tied to Ptolemy's universe too long. Now you have shown that the Earth rotates on her axis, and that she revolves around the Sun, along with the other planets. This book will revolutionize men's thinking.
However, Copernicus's work was not received with much enthusiasm. The Catholics and Protestants were both firmly tied to the universe as described by Aristotle and Ptolemy. During the 1,000 years since Ptolemy, the only major work in Europe in astronomy was done to correct the calendar. Even this important work had many roadblocks to overcome due to various religious rivalries. But in the Arab world of North Africa and the Middle East, scholars were translating the works of the Greek philosophers, which they found in the ruins of Alexandria and other great cities. By the 11th century, the Arab Muslim world had moved into Spain, and there the Christian scholars first learned of the great works of the Greeks and translated the invaluable Arabic translations into Latin. As books were still handwritten and few could read any language, the spreading of this knowledge took considerable time. But by 1473, when Copernicus was born, this knowledge was available in various schools and universities. By this time, people no longer believed that the world was flat, and the voyages of Columbus and Magellan more than disproved this fallacy. Copernicus's book was rejected by both Catholics and Protestants, as it could not be confirmed by the Bible or Aristotle's work, which had been made part of the church's tenets. Some German and English astronomers tried to use Copernicus's calculations, but since Copernicus also believed in Aristotle's perfect circular motion of the planets and used epicycles to explain their variations, the astronomers found his system no easier than the Ptolemy system. After all, Copernicus had made only 27 observations to support his theories. Science demanded many more. Tycho Brahe, a Danish nobleman, was summoned in 1576 to appear before the king, Frederick II.
Your Highness, I am Tycho Brahe, and am here at your bidding.
Brahe, I have learned that you plan to leave Denmark to continue your astronomy studies in Germany.
That is true, Your Highness, but...
No buts, please. A true Dane would remain in his native land, and any good that would come from his work would reflect favorably on his own country.
But in Germany, there are many noted scholars who can help me in my work.
The scholars can just as well visit you as you them. What I am proposing is that an observatory be built for you on an island off the coast of Elsinore Castle. There you will have every convenience and necessity that is required for your work. Assistants, workmen, and servants will be at your beck and call. Do you accept?
I most certainly do.
Shortly thereafter, construction was begun on Oranjeborg, and it had every convenience that an astronomer could ask for. With the aid of new instruments, the astrolabe, the quadrant, and the sextant, Brahe set himself and his staff to work with a fury. Every night for 20 years, they measured the positions of the stars and the planets. These undoubtedly were the most accurate observations made up to this time. But with this wealth of material, there was one problem. There was no one to interpret the data. Tycho Brahe was not a mathematician. Eventually, he left Uraniborg and settled outside of Prague under the sponsorship of Rudolf II. 1 year later, he was joined by Johannes Kepler, a young German mathematician.
Herr Kepler, I understand that you have quite a reputation.
Well, I have been fortunate to publish a book on astronomy.
A book? You young fellows think one book can sustain you for a lifetime. I have devoted over 20 years in collecting data about the heavens. The most complete measurements ever.
I look forward to inspecting your observations. They may help me in my work.
Now is not the time for such extracurricular activities. You shall help me in constructing new tables of planetary motion. They will be called the Rudolphine Tables, in honor of our sponsor.
1 year later, Tycho Brahe was dead, and Kepler was given his position, but at a much smaller salary. Kepler had promised to complete the Rudolphine Tables for Brahe, but this was not done until 26 years later. Kepler had been busy with his own experiments. Using the many observations of Brahe, he was able, after a number of years, to discover the true course of the planets. They moved in an ellipse and not in a perfect circle. He also discovered that the speed of a planet varies, faster when it nears the sun and slower when it is further away. He also established a mathematical relationship between a planet's average distance from the sun and the time it takes to make a journey around the sun. These discoveries did away once and for all with the epicycles and other artificial devices used to plot a planet's path. In his time, Kepler received little or no rewards for his work. But in recent years, he has been considered as important, if not more so, than Copernicus and Brahe.